Here at KUOW, we have kind of a resident expert on laughter. Morning Edition host Bill Radke was a successful stand-up comic, and he often says there are really only 9 different kinds of jokes.
Well, Scott Weems thinks a lot about what makes us laugh and why, too. He is a neuroscientist, and he's also a big fan of humor. Marcy Silman recently talked with Scott about his new book, Ha! The Science of When We Laugh and Why. She asked him what led him to focus on studying what happens in the brain when it encounters humor.
I wish I could remember exactly when I started my focus on humor, but I guess it really started after I was in graduate school. Sadly, it was quite a few years ago that I graduated from school. And at the time, I was interested in humor, and I read quite a bit about it, but I wasn't sure I could make a living studying it, if only because it was not a very respected field of study. And even now, it's not very common for people to just exclusively study humor. So I focused on language, reasoning, metaphor, these higher functions. But the more I studied these things, the more it just kept coming back to humor. And that humor is like intelligence or creativity, these other very broad things that I think really are uniquely human. And so it's really only been about the past 10 years that I guess the field has really bloomed and become a respected research field. And that's kind of when I got into it, too.
So you're telling me humor is now a serious research field?
It is. It is serious. I like to draw the distinction between being serious and being solemn. I take humor very seriously. It's an interesting topic, and it says a lot about who we are. But that doesn't mean we have to be solemn. It's an interesting topic, so it's just kind of fun to learn about. But it's also worth advanced study.
You come right out of the gate at the top of the book, and you say that really it's conflict that's at the heart of jokes and humorous responses, which seems like an oxymoron.
In a way, except it's a shame we think of conflict as a bad thing. It's actually good, and our brains like conflict. A passive brain is a lazy brain, and that's not healthy, psychologically or physically. It's good to be engaged. And so conflict really isn't like conflict like we sometimes think between people, though it can be. Really, it's the process of working things out, and that's what not just jokes are, but all social interaction is, I think, where you have some sort of expectation and then you're surprised and you jump out of that and you learn a new way of thinking. And I think jokes are just a very fast way of doing that.
So physiologically, what happens exactly when the brain encounters this conflict that you're talking about?
Yeah, so without getting too technical, there's one part of the brain it's worth recognizing right off, and it's called the anterior cingulate. It's not on the surface, it's a little beneath, and it's essentially our conflict detector. So it becomes very active when we just get conflicting information about our surroundings, but also when we hear a joke. Interestingly, it's active for a lot of things. I mean, our brains aren't just specialized for humor. So, for example, I'm trying to think, there's the moments of, we call them epiphanies, when you get that spine-chilling feeling of something that's very moving for you. Some people get that when there's, you know, very moving music that they hear. You also get the anterior cingulate active for moments like that, too. And it's because these are moments where you kind of rethink things. You're shaken up a little bit. And our brains like that. And it also releases a chemical called dopamine in our brain when we get that feeling of satisfaction. And our brains like that feeling. It's a good thing until we seek it out.
I've heard of dopamine. It's a chemical, as you mentioned, but what else can trigger it in our brains?
Yeah, dopamine is used for a lot of things. It's kind of our pleasure chemical. I mean, that's a simplification a little bit, but it is pretty closely tied to pleasure. We get extra dopamine in our brains when we eat chocolate. And also some drugs like cocaine, that's basically the neurotransmitter system that is targeted by cocaine. It increases the amount of dopamine available in our brain. And so in a way that makes humor a very, I guess, a legal high, that it might not be as strong as cocaine, and that's good. And it's also not as addictive, but you get the same general kind of pleasure from it.
I'm talking with Scott Weems. His book is called Ha! The Science of When We Laugh and Why. There are synapses that develop in our brains when we're born and as we develop and get older. But we see little babies laughing. So do we come out of the womb ready to understand humor?
I think we do, actually. It's a funny thing that babies laugh whether they've seen it or not. It's almost hardwired into our brains. And Aristotle actually claimed that the first day that we laugh, which is usually about the 40th day of our life, that's when we have a soul. That's when we become human. And so it's interesting that usually somewhere around that 40-day mark is when pretty much all babies laugh. And so I think it's just because that's the way the brain has evolved to deal with conflict and deal with the process of learning. And usually that happens pretty quick for babies.
Do other animal species have a sense of humor the way Homo sapiens do?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And it has two answers. On one level, yes, they definitely laugh. We know that not only do apes laugh, but dogs laugh, even rats laugh. As part of my book, I interviewed a researcher from Chicago, Jeffrey Bergdorf, who tickles rats for a living. And I thought that was fascinating. And it sounds silly at first, but it's actually very important because he's tickling rats to monitor their laughter and see what happens in their brain. And he's doing that to look for treatments for depression. Because if you can understand what makes a rat happy, then you're on the track to understanding what makes people happy too. But then you get back to this issue of humor. Tickling isn't necessarily just humor. And it's trickier to ask if dogs or rats or other animals have a humor. But there is one funny story that will kind of make you think that maybe yes. And it's from a chimpanzee named Washo, who was trained sign language.
Out here in Washington State, I believe.
Yes, I believe so. And his caregiver was Roger Fouts. And there was one day Washo was sitting on Fouts' shoulders, and all of a sudden Washo started urinating. And this was obviously distressing for Fouts because, you know, it's not pleasant having an animal on your shoulders start going to the bathroom. And so he looked up at Washo and tried to figure out what was going on. And Washo made the sign language for funny. And so the joke literally and figuratively was on Fouts. And so that's humor, I think.
Well, the Washo thought it was funny.
He did. And I mean, I guess if you're not Fouts, it is funny. So you're getting back to that old Mel Brooks line. It's funny if you fall down a manhole, but not if I do.
Right. You're a neuroscientist, so really you're studying all the things that happen in our brain when this goes on. How much of our humor reaction or response is filtered through the nurture portion of, you know, the nature-nurture, where we grow up, what our families laughed at, what race, what gender, what age we are?
Yeah, all of these things make a difference. The good news, I think, and this is going to be simplifying a little bit, but not too much, that if you have unfunny siblings or parents, that you're okay, because it doesn't look like there's a huge genetic component to sense of humor. So I think a lot of it is learned, although everybody definitely laughs. But there's definitely factors which will play along. Age has a big difference. People who are older, they kind of laugh less and they find jokes. They don't like absurd humor. They like their humor a little more straightforward. Women laugh more than men. That one's pretty strong. So if you put two women in a room and have them talk, they'll probably laugh about twice as much as two men in the same room. So there's lots of factors that will influence. There's also nationality differences, too. People from Europe like different kind of humor than Americans do.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because what has always mystified me is why the French love Jerry Lewis so much. And, you know, there's a sort of brand of gross out humor that's also very popular in France, but very prevalent in the United States where, you know, in reading your book, I sort of measured a lot of the jokes. I'm more inclined to the sort of Aaron Sorkin-esque snarky repartee. I don't know what that says about me.
I absolutely love Aaron Sorkin. He is one of my favorite writers. And when people ask who are my favorite writers, I mention him. And they often think of him as TV and they don't think of that as writing. But his writing is very sharp.
You include in this book a joke that is purported to be the funniest joke in the world. And I was wondering if you would tell it.
Sure, yeah. So two hunters are walking in the woods, and all of a sudden one of them falls to the ground, and his eyes are glazed, and he's not breathing, so his friend is panicked. So he calls 911, and the operator picks up. Yes, sir, what's your emergency? He goes, oh my gosh, I think my friend is dead. What do I do? And the lady goes, okay, you know, calm down. First, I need you to check and make sure that he's dead. There's a little bit of a pause on the other line, and then all of a sudden, bam! And the guy comes back, and he says, all right, I did that. Now what?
Okay. People are either laughing or horrified right now. What made this the funniest joke in the world? Who made this the funniest joke in the world, I guess I should ask?
Okay, yeah, so first a disclaimer. I never claimed to be a comedian, so it might be able to be delivered better. But the experiment was Richard Wiseman was the British psychologist who ran it. And it was actually huge. He asked people from all over the world, getting over 1 million responses, what their favorite joke was. So people could submit their favorites and also rate other people's that had been submitted. And so that one won, with lots of people giving it quite high votes. Now, I think the thing is, when you ask so many people for humor tastes, you're asking a little bit for mediocrity, because you're looking for jokes that are, you know, are kind of safe. You know, you don't want to offend. If they're too edgy, then they're going to offend too many people. It doesn't get high ratings. But at least it was better than the one that was the most submitted entry, which was what's brown and sticky? A stick. That was the number one most entered joke. So he was at least happy that didn't win.
That one isn't funny. I've heard people described as humorless. Is it possible to be completely without humor?
You know, this is a tough one. When scientists went out and observed laughter and measured how often they laughed, they found that pretty much everybody laughed. That said, does everybody have a sense of humor? I don't think so. It's tricky. And it really is just a matter of personality. Some people, when they see some absurd situation, their first inclination is to laugh because they want to see the comedy in it. Some people default to seeing the tragedy in the very same moments. So I think it really is a matter of outlook. And I think any of us can choose to see life as a comedy rather than tragedy. It takes a little bit of practice and just kind of immersing yourself in humor as much as possible.
That was Scott Weems talking to Marcy Silman about his new book, Ha! The Science of When We Laugh and Why. It looks at what happens in the brain when we encounter humor. You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde.